Welcome to Nothing Ventured, a podcast exploring some of the lesser heard stories in tech and venture. Join me, Arish Shah, as I speak to founders, investors, and ecosystem operators in the UK and beyond. Hello and welcome to Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today, I am so excited. I can't tell you how excited to have Arianna Thacker with me. Arianna comes from a background in chemical engineering from UCLA. She's one of the most prolific investors I know within the tech ecosystem and has had experience across deep tech startups and venture firms. Arianna is now founding partner at Conscience VC, an early stage fund investing at the intersection of consumer and science. Hi, Arianna. It's great to have you here with me today.
Hey, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
Amazing. So look, you've had a really, really diverse background. I'd love for you to kind of give our listeners a bit of a journey through what you've been doing and how you've ended up now in venture.
Sure, happy to. So I discovered early on I love science and engineering. So when I was in middle school, I was in something called the Science Academy and just fell in love. We were taking these advanced courses across chemistry, physics, biology, and that just unfolded into this journey into the sciences. Fast forward a bit, ended up majoring in chemical engineering at UCLA, but I also took courses beyond the chemical engineering curriculum, dabbled in pre-med classes, as well as mechanical engineering. And throughout my time at UCLA and upon graduation, had a variety of different engineering roles. So when I was in school, I was doing tissue engineering research, worked at Abbott Labs, also worked at Phillips 66 Refinery. When I graduated, ended up working for a joint venture between Exxon and Shell. I always say, you know, I have a hot pink hard hat and steel-toed boots working out in the desert. And that role spans surface and subsurface operations. So I was working within the gas plant, the compressor stations, the gas pipelines, and then managing fluid to surface events and abandoning wells and pumping unit design. So it was this kind of engineering, oil and gas, Disneyland. After that experience and the collective experience before that, realized, hey, you know, I don't think pursuing a PhD or doing in-depth R&D or working at a big company is really a great personality fit. I kind of felt trapped in a box doing a lot of the same kind of repeat technical roles. And I've always just been so naturally curious about a lot of different things. And I've been told I talk fast, I move fast. So I also felt big companies were a bit constraining in that way. And then that's when I discovered startups. So I ended up being on the founding team of an academic spin-out from UCLA. So that was my first experience in a startup, which wasn't really something you did when I went to school. It wasn't in the vernacular. Now I feel like there's a Shark Tank on every campus, basically. And fast forward a bit, I just loved working with founders, worked with a ton of different founders and basically consulting capacity to learn as much as possible. And then ended up in venture, where I was focused on more of these technical investments. So yeah, kind of a random hodgepodge pathway from engineering to startups to now venture.
Amazing. I think that's, yeah, probably the fastest background I've ever heard. As you say, you talk quick and act fast. I've been told that I talk fairly quickly, but I don't think I've got anything on you. It'd be great to understand a little bit more about Conscience in that case. So what's the thesis there? What do you look to invest in? Tell me a little bit about the fund.
Yeah, so similar to my background, my thesis is also very weird. And in Conscience, I'm combining consumer and science together. Most people kind of tilt their head and raise their eyebrows and they're like, WTF, you mean consumer and science? Those things don't blend together. And I think they do. And I think it's tied to a lot of interesting consumer behavioral trends too. You're seeing a lot more consumers wanting to know what they're buying, being a lot more educated about it. And also in a world where there's so many different consumer-facing brands, there's a lot of noise there. And how do they stand out? And I think that standing out happens with technical defensibility. So there's also many more nuanced reasons on why the thesis makes sense. But circling back to your original question, it's blending consumer and science together. So tangible examples that most people understand and know about: Tesla, 23andMe. These are companies that have successfully packaged and consumerized, if that's a word, scientific breakthrough and technical innovation. And they have real technical defensibility with these consumer-facing business models. And in Conscience specifically, I'd love to go earlier stage. I love supporting the underdog, and I can't imagine a better underdog story than an early stage founder taking on these established companies and breaking in. So I typically come in as one of the first check writers, if not the first check writer at the pre-seed and seed stage.
Amazing. And so it sounds like predominantly sort of hardware, so engineered tooled products as opposed to potentially software. Is that right?
So I would say it's generalist at first glance, but it has these phase gates that a company would have to pass to qualify to be a consumer science company, and that can span even therapeutics. It can span AI. So it can be a lot more broad than just physical hardware products.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So, okay, just diving into kind of your background a little bit further as well, because really this is your first sort of fund that you're managing. So as a first-time fund manager, how easy was it to attract LPs? Like, how did you build those relationships and what were the main challenges to get them on board?
It was, that was probably the hardest part, because I didn't come from this world, right? I came from humble beginnings. I'm the first in my family to go to college. I ended up self-funding that and still managing to graduate in 4 years with all the breadth of random things I was doing on campus, across being president of Society of Women Engineers and the internships and the R&D and the lab. So, you know, I just didn't come from this world, both from a career standpoint and a family standpoint. So breaking in was really hard. These are very difficult circles to break into, and it took a lot of resilience and networking. And frankly, I didn't know that I could pull it off. Like, a lot of folks were like, oh, you just knew this whole time, you had this confidence and whatever. I'm like, no, there were many points where I was like, okay, I could easily be wiped out because I liquidated everything to make this happen and fronted my life savings. So just given that, there wasn't a lot of certainty, but it was about being creative and doing my best every day. And a few things that helped was having this differentiated thesis, having this, frankly, differentiated background, having some initial investments that did quite well early on. So I started off with, I'm calling it a proof of concept fund, but it was an SPV that packaged multiple companies together. And that built an early track record to then be able to showcase to investors, hey, I have the investment chops and I have the operations experience to run a fund. So that de-risked that for some LPs. And then I talk about this in another podcast, but it was also peacocking. I can't think of a better word to describe it, but growth hacking conscience to be the most followed VC firm on LinkedIn. And that stood out. And investors were just naturally curious, hey, how did you pull that off? Can we have a discussion about that? I would love to learn more. So doing things to stand out and differentiate, not to be flashy, but it, like, to actually have those things have some sort of function and meaning for the fund too.
Yeah, I mean, I think not just conscious, but obviously you have a 30,000 odd following on LinkedIn. So you obviously know something about bringing a community along with you. And I think that's become hugely important across venture. At the moment, we're seeing the proliferation, I think I've said this before as well, of kind of marketing as a service within venture, or venture becoming venture as a service with a huge kind of marketing arm around it. We're seeing that with Andreessen Horowitz. We're seeing with Index and Accel and others. Talk to me a little bit about kind of, you mentioned there the operations of the venture, right? So we were just talking before the podcast, you explaining to me some of the things you've done. It'd be great to kind of get that kind of metrics list of what the fund looks like.
Yeah, there's just so much that goes into that question. So it'll just be a bit of a random train of thoughts, if that's okay. So first you have to figure out which service providers you want to work with. And that was a whole beast in itself, like contacting all these service providers, getting the meetings going, figuring out what's in budget, what makes the most sense for the fund. And that's across fund admin, tax, who you're banking with, et cetera. Like, that was just a whole beast in itself. So that got mapped out. Also, there's, if you could triage a fund, there's three different operations, right? Sourcing, due diligence, value add for founders. And then it's building out the tech and people and processes to serve those three buckets. So on the sourcing end, structured a 50-person venture partner program. And it's not just random Joe Schmoes. It was the most legitimate people I could find, diversified across network access, geography, and domain expertise. So that's one aspect of sourcing. I also booked multiple quarterly calls. At the moment, I'm north of 40 with different fund managers that either fall in consumer or deep tech, right? There isn't really a firm to collaborate with at this intersection of consumer and science. So I'm looking at both of those buckets. And then I'm also cross-pollinating those opportunities, if that's okay with the fund manager, within that kind of ad hoc community. I also formed something called Club Conscience, which isn't public-facing yet, but it's around 250 people, which includes my LPs, advisors, valued co-investors, portfolio companies, just fun friends that I wanted to loop in randomly. And we're presenting on things not readily found on the internet. The last presenters shared extraterrestrials, how autonomous vehicles actually work, which is really so fascinating, and then the science of network effects, right? So things not easily or readily found on the internet, coming from people that understand those domains. So that all helps with sourcing. And then on the due diligence front, using tech, I recently discovered a website that allows me to have unlimited research pools on specific subjects. So that expedites the due diligence greatly. So I'm not out there structuring and aggregating all this data across all these different websites. Also leaning on the scouts as well. They tend to want to help. And recently built in an internship program in the fund, which has been awesome. The interns are fantastic, and hired a part-time chief of staff based in South America who's been really helpful with data pulling. So that helps us move fast. Plus, there's very minimal bureaucracy in a solo GP, which is fantastic. That's how we're able to move so quickly. And the third bucket, I can't talk about too much of what I'm working on because it's still kind of stealthy, but I'm doing these POCs for unprecedented value add across the portfolio, specifically around marketing and finding non-dilutive sources of capital for these consumer-facing businesses. So actively working on that. I think that would come into full bloom, a fund two, maybe even an early fund three.
That's amazing. So you're clearly not standing still, to say the least. So if we move on maybe to talk about kind of the investments themselves, right? So beyond that intersection of consumer and science, what do you need there to be in a venture for you to invest? What is most important to you? Is it the team, the tech, the market? What, obviously, it's going to be a combination of factors, but what is that sort of one thing that really, you know, connects with you that you want to be able to see?
Yeah, there's a few different phase gates. So my quick qualifiers to even have an initial screening call, typically sub 15 mil in valuation is what I'm targeting out of this fund for now. I do see Conscience evolving to being multi-stage, but that's my quick pass there. In terms of location, US and Canada, so that's another pass. There has to be some sort of consumer-facing business model, and there has to be some sort of technical defensibility within the business, some sort of science-led aspect or pathway to being defensible and differentiated. So all those things to even get an initial call. And then from there, on the initial call, a lot of deal-breaker type questions. I try to brainstorm in advance what has to be true for this business to be a success or failure, and then that's when I get several of my deal-breaker questions out. And also a bit of founder psychology. I'm getting to know the founder. And if to more directly answer your question, how do I rank these things? I'm actually in the process of mapping this out in a very detailed spreadsheet across founder, market, traction, defensibility, blah, blah, blah. So there's all these like little things that I look for. But if I were to just kind of force rank it, founder first, but there has to be a big market and a market structure that allows for growth, as well as the technical defensibility, which was we knew about from the very first meeting, right? So all these things are important.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting for a lot of the founders that listen to this podcast and I've worked with, you know, there is this sort of assumption that investors, VCs especially, you know, will see business has some growth, I'm interested, right? Clearly, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. There's a lot of sort of boxes that you need ticked, certainly to, you know, both to kind of play out your thesis, but equally because that's what you're comfortable with, right? And I think it's really important for founders to understand that. I mean, I think I recently shared potentially a deal with you, and I've just realized that it doesn't fulfill your US-Canada gate. And that's, you know, that may well be a reason that, you know, you might not be interested. But I can quite kind of understand why those things are really important to you, because again, presumably you've got limited bandwidth, you've got to do a lot of sort of passing of information, and it makes sense for you to have a really kind of strong structure. And as you say, phase gates that people have to pass through even to get that initial call. I think that's a really set insight, because I think a lot of people assume that when they're sending their decks to a venture fund, there's, you know, that they will have a call with absolutely everyone that comes through the door, when clearly that's not the case. So I wanted to kind of move from that in terms of what you look for. Why should founders pick you or Conscience? What is it that you think that you have to offer them that is really differentiated?
Yeah, there's a few things. So one, I'll talk about some press that's been really positive related to founders going out and saying kind things about Conscience. So I was ranked number one on VC Guide, I have a number of anonymous reviews on there. I have no idea who posted them, but immensely positive on VC Guide. On my LinkedIn, I don't even know how many recommendations I'm at this point. I think it's over 40, mostly founders, and just discussing the ways I've been value add. And if I were to bucket the ways I've been helpful, so I was first check-in or one of the first checks in to around half of the companies so far out of the fund. So being an early believer and helping them close those rounds quickly, providing strategic advice on how to do that, giving detailed deck review, helping them with their pitch, coaching them, etc. So that's one, capital access, usually up to the Series A. After that, I'm frankly a lot less helpful in terms of capital access. And usually there's others around the table that can be a lot more helpful at the Series B+. And the second bucket is being a technical sounding board. I've heard from a few CTOs something along the sentiment of, oh, our first call feels like a fourth call or fourth meeting. There's just this immediate technical understanding, which they don't really get with a lot of investors. You don't really see investors with engineering backgrounds or science backgrounds doing particularly early stage investing. You probably see most of these folks doing the later stage investing at these established funds. So there's that rapport, there's that understanding. And third, even on an emotional level, I feel like a founder. I feel like a lot of the founders often don't come from much and they're building, right? So there's this resonance there and this understanding. And if I were to throw a fourth thing in, as I'm building these platforms for founder value add, that's going to be, I think, quite helpful. I'm still validating if it makes sense to build that out, but so far early indications show yes.
So just touching on a couple of things there. So I think we're moving into a phase where capital is pretty ubiquitous, and therefore that differentiation angle, I think, is hugely important. So I think whatever it is that you're looking at building out, I'd be very surprised if the feedback was don't. You know, it's exactly the sort of thing I think the ecosystem needs to see more of. And I think you touched on it there. Obviously, within a lot of venture, you have people that come predominantly from a finance background. I think, you know, to your point, there are probably fewer kind of hardcore engineers within the space, or maybe they, you know, maybe they sit within a fund as advisors, but not necessarily kind of at the investment level. And I can see exactly, especially in kind of deep tech, hard tech sort of environments, it's obviously going to be massively valuable for a founder or their founding team to have that, again, sounding board, as you say. So yeah, I think all of that is massively important. And you also touched on this, right? Because you talked about your background and sort of where you've come from and supporting founders that maybe have had similar backgrounds. So how do you embrace diversity at Conscious? You know, what are those North Stars for you?
Yeah, I don't have a firm metric for that, but it just happened that 80% of the founders so far are either female or diverse. So there's that. And then more broadly, 35 investments so far. There's 9 out of the fund as of the date of this podcast, and 35 more broadly. And across the broader portfolio, I'm north of 50%. And I think maybe that's less bias in the process. I don't know what's really driving that. Or maybe just by virtue of being female, it's attracting more founders that look and talk like me. I have no idea. But those are the numbers as of today.
Well, whatever the reason, it's obviously positive. I mean, I think, you know, previously we've talked about on the podcast that if you get more diversity throughout the kind of ecosystem, right from the LPs all the way down to, you know, to the founding teams, then hopefully you're going to see more diversity, and just having, you know, diversity at the investment level, clearly that's going to help bring in people either from diverse backgrounds or ethnicity or gender or whatever it might be. So I think those stats are pretty impressive, to say the least. So going back to kind of, you know, one of the things you touched upon, you know, you've built this huge audience on LinkedIn, both for Conscious as well as yourself. In your opinion now, how important is it now for a VC to be active on social? And how do you think that's changed the nature of venture? And thinking of like Andreessen Horowitz, obviously, is a very good example there. We're all talking about the creator economy at the moment. But for someone who's actually gone out there, build that community, in fact, several times, you know, from your perspective, how important is it?
I think it depends on the strategy of your fund. Ironically, I think for what I'm doing, it's not at all important. And just because the thesis is so niche, I haven't invested out of the fund with a cold outreach on LinkedIn just yet. I am looking at those messages and taking the meeting. So there hasn't been any tangible output from that. I think it was more so helpful on the fundraising side and maybe even winning some deals because the founders see, hey, this person's a real person. They have a digital footprint and I like their vibe, or this really stood out. A founder call earlier today had listened to another podcast and read through some of the posts and said, you know, all of that resonated really deeply. I'm so excited to hop on this call. So maybe that element helps with closing as well as fundraising, but probably less so sourcing. And I've actually crowdsourced this with some friends. I was like, have you ever, because I'm not on Twitter. I'm one of the only investors not on Twitter. I'm only on LinkedIn. I don't have an Instagram, a Facebook, Snapchat, MySpace, if that's still relevant. So I'm not on any of these platforms, but I've asked, you know, have you closed anything or found winning founders on Twitter? And so far I haven't come across anyone where Twitter was actually helpful in terms of making an investment. So, you know, TBD, I'm always evaluating, does it make sense to get on Twitter? For right now, probably not. I'm already, you know, spread quite thin with everything I'm doing.
I think that's actually quite funny, because if when you do get onto Twitter, if you ever do, the majority of US VCs seem to have a real bee in their bonnet about LinkedIn. So you're obviously an outlier in that space. I have to be honest, I found it much easier to build community on LinkedIn than I have on Twitter, and really valuable community, I would say, at that, as opposed to kind of fairly toxic community that you can end up getting on other platforms. So Ariana, as we kind of bring things kind of to a wrap here, what would be your sort of most significant piece of advice that you would give founders? What is it that you think that they should really focus on, and how do you think that that will kind of play into their success?
Yeah, great question. Could I constrain it a bit? Maybe advice for fundraising specifically. I would say research the investor that you're pitching. I get so many cold emails that are not at all relevant to what I'm doing. And these investors or these founders are also persistent about follow-ups too, when it just wasn't relevant to my thesis. So, you know, spend some time on the website or the GP's LinkedIn and research them a bit before sending a cold email out, and then have those cold emails be hyper-personalized to that person. I think the conversion rates are a lot higher. I've even taken calls with folks that aren't in thesis, but they sent something so personalized and so thoughtful. I'm like, you know, I'm going to hop on a call and see if I can be helpful. So that goes a long way. And not inundating the investor with a ton of information. There's often just a few things they need to know if it makes sense to hop on a call. And that, you know, a one-liner on what you're doing, have that be towards the top. Second, any amount of traction that you've had, so month-over-month growth, dollars, notable partnerships, notable investors on board, grants that you've landed, all of that is relevant and interesting and usually high signal. And I would say, lastly, you can include a calendar link too. That helps with booking and scheduling. I'm not offended when people send me a Calendly. That just helps my life so much more, as I'm averaging 40 to upwards of 60 meetings a week. So being able to book easily helps. And a link to your website and deck and LinkedIn too, if I want to dig in further. But that would literally be the perfect cold email.
Even today, decks come through with 40 slides littered with information, really impossible to kind of pass the information at all. And I think, you know, I often say to founders, like, your deck is just a foot in the door. It's not the whole conversation. So, you know, make it really, really kind of valuable and punchy to whoever the audience is, which obviously in most cases is an investor. Ariana, it's been absolutely amazing speaking to you today. I know you've got a hugely busy schedule ahead of you. So for our listeners, so you're not on Twitter, where can they find you on LinkedIn? What are the kind of handles that you have there?
Yeah, so the best way to find me is Ariana, and then I included my middle name, which actually helps with random cold emails, because there's a lot of these automated bots. So if you include your middle name and your first name, you can easily filter out what's a real message and what's not. So Ariana Desiree, so it's spelled desire with an extra E, and then Thacker is spelled like T-Hacker. So that's me on LinkedIn.
Amazing. Ariana, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. Have a great day ahead.
You too. Take care.
Thanks for listening to Nothing Ventured, an Emerge One production. We'd love to get your feedback and thoughts on our conversations, as well as topics or guests you'd love to hear from. Drop me a line on social media or via one of the links in the show notes. I mean, what have you got to lose, right?